welcome to Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm your host, Cammy, and I have with me Heather Farley. We are continuing our Now series, Narrating Ordained Women. And Heather posted her profile on ordainedwomen.org, and we're going to talk a little bit about why she did and her experience. So, Heather, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit to the audience before we begin?
Sure. I'm Heather, and I currently live in Oakland, California. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, and my parents were both converts to the church in their teen years, and they met at Institute. And so I grew up in the church, and I went to BYU for school. I studied math, and now I have three kids. I am a knitter, and I'm currently working on a book of knitting patterns, so I'm a knitwear designer. And we're car free. That's another fun thing about us. We don't have a car, so we get around by biking and taking the bus.
And that's a like by choice kind of thing?
Yeah, our car broke down a couple years ago, and we thought, hey, we live in a place that I bet it's possible to get around without a car, so let's try it. And then we just kept doing that.
That's awesome. And do your kids, do you pull them behind you in those little things they can sit in?
We started with that because we didn't have any gear at all. But now we have a bike that can hold up to four kids.
Oh.
It's like a minivan, but it's a bike.
That is so awesome. Yeah, that really impressed me, Heather. We had, when my ex-husband and I were married and he lost his job, we went back on everything that we could possibly take out of our budget. And one of the things was TV, because it costs just to have the regular TV channels where I lived. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how you get used to not having it. Once he had a job and we wanted to spend the money on it, we got the TV channels and we didn't like it. So we took it back off again. And it's interesting how you can just enjoy life without the things people think that we need, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, thank you for saving our planet.
We're trying.
So did you met your husband at BYU? Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we were in the same ward. I think we were in the same FHE group, but I never went until we started dating.
Oh, that's sweet. And did you guys get married while you were still students?
Yeah, I had a year left and he had two. Mm. And then I was 10 weeks pregnant at graduation and got a job until I had my first. And he ended up doing his master's there, so we stayed a couple more years. Oh. And then he got a job out here, and my knitting can pretty much follow me anywhere. So we're in Oakland.
So he has a master's in what?
Computer science.
Computer science. And then you got your degree in?
In math.
Math. Okay, that's what I thought. But you do knitting. You're putting a knitting book together to sell. Are these designs you've created?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm currently working on a book based off of a very popular nerdy movie that I'm not sure I can disclose.
Oh, okay.
So when that comes out, I'll be very excited.
Okay.
But all these patterns are based off of that movie, so it's kind of a fun project.
Okay. All right. Well, when that comes out, if you want to put a link on to this recording, I can do that. So just get back in contact with me and I'll fix that.
All right.
Okay. So you have how many children now?
I have three. Okay. My oldest is six. And then I have a almost four-year-old. He'll be four in like a month and a half. And then I have a 16-month-old.
So you're not busy at all.
No, I am bored to tears every moment of my day.
Oh, my goodness. I just had one, and that was a lot. That's wonderful.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's awesome. And how long have you guys lived in the Oakland area?
We've been in Oakland for 4 years now. Okay. So my last two were born here in Oakland.
Okay. Okay. And you guys are currently like in a ward?
Yes, we are in the Oakland First Ward, which is in the Oakland, California stake. So it's not very creative there. Oakland. So
that's great. Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about when and why you posted your profile on ordainedwomen.org.
Yeah, I was actually one of the very first 16 people who had their profiles up. It was very, very scary because no one else had done it before. I just happened to get an email because I blog for the Exponent, and they, I guess Kate Kelly and whoever else was on the board at the time, I don't know if they had a board for Ordained Women at the time. They're just trying to reach out to various Mormon women's groups and Mormon feminists. And we got this email, and it really stuck in my head because when I lived in Provo, we lived in a family ward when we first got married. I didn't want to do a student ward. Mm. And it was a ward where they always say, you know, what do they say? Newlywed or nearly dead. So,
okay, I've been in those.
There's a lot of newlyweds, and then there were two like apartment complexes in our ward boundaries that were age restricted to seniors. Mm. And so there were a bunch of elderly people. And there was a woman in the ward, and I remember there in Relief Society, and she would tell this story a lot. And she would talk about how when the priesthood ban was lifted in 1978, how happy she was and how, you know, she and her friends had prayed for this, and then she like called up her friends and they were just so excited and so happy. And I remember one of those times she was telling this story. And this was before I don't know if at the time I identified as a Mormon feminist. But I just, the thought came to me to say, just to tell myself, when you are old, like this woman here, I want to tell the same story. I want to be the one in Relief Society that raises my hand and says, we were so excited for this. And I was there and I did everything I could for this.
For the priesthood, for the priesthood for women?
For priesthood for women, yes. We were so excited to hear that the priesthood would be extended to all members. And I just, that was something I just told myself. I didn't tell anybody. It was like this little promise I made to myself. Mm. And I even used lines like, oh, I don't want the priesthood. I'm just, you know, wanting that, you know, as social capital, like with family members and stuff. No, I'm not one of those. But like inside, I secretly knew I was kind of lying.
Yeah.
And when I got the email saying, hey, they're starting this website and they need people to put profiles up, I felt like I was kind of stuck. Because when I made that promise to myself, I was expecting that to happen, you know, decades from now.
yeah.
You know, when I'm 40 or 50 and I'm established and my family is established and I'm not like still testing the waters in a new ward. Because at the time, well, I'd been in the ward for like 3 years. But I was still using that line that, you know, I'm not advocating for the priesthood as social capital. And so I was really kind of scared to put it up because I just, you know, I was afraid to lose that social capital. Mm-hmm. But I also knew that if I didn't put it up, I had no integrity to myself because I promised myself that I would have done everything I possibly could. Mm-hmm. So I put it up. I sent it in, and that was very scary, but it went up.
Wow. And when it went up, was it immediately seen by people that knew you, or did you make it known immediately, or how did that happen?
People knew. I've never really told my parents and stuff, and I didn't speak about it with in-laws and things because they already felt that as a Mormon feminist, I was long gone, I guess.
Of course. Outer darkness, yes.
So I usually try to keep things, I keep my relationship to the church as a larger organization separate than my relationship to the ward. So I never even told like people within the ward. However, the day before it went up, on March 16th, 2000 and what was last year, 13, there was a fireside. And Christine Hagland was in town and she was giving a talk about how change happens in the church. And I happened to be there with some people from the Berkeley ward, and like I think the stake president was there, and the person who would then become my bishop last fall we were at the tail end of a bishop, and so our new bishop happened to be there. He wasn't bishop yet. And a bunch of people were there. And at the end of the meeting, Carolyn Pearson, she's in our stake, she stood up and said, "Everybody, there's this website going up tomorrow. This is the website, and you should all read this." And I was sitting there like, oh my goodness, I'm on that website, and I have no anonymity at all.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of scary, but, you know, no one said anything to me. And I think people just, I mean, at the time, there was like 16 people. Mm-hmm. And I was actually the very bottom one on the right, so you had to like scroll. And now if you try to find mine, you have to scroll a lot. So mm-hmm. I kind of hid behind the fact that I wasn't the one people clicked on. People mm-hmm. clicked on the first row, not me down at the bottom, mm-hmm. on the very bottom.
Right.
Yeah.
That's, okay, I'll edit this part, but that's amazing. I went to go last year when I was going through my faith transition. I reached out to Carolyn Pearson because she was always, I grew up with all of her books as a kid, and my mom knew her a little bit, so felt like a family friend, you know? And I got to go visit her last year and went on a walk with her behind her house. And sometimes she'll call to see how I'm doing. And it's just, she is amazing.
She is. She's currently using her social capital for her polygamy project.
Yes.
That's why I think she's been more silent on the ordained women issue. But she was very excited about it at that meeting.
Yes, that's wonderful. I think that's great that, you know, she has cared so much about the church and how it affects her people in the church, and pushing for things that help to, what's the word? I can't even think of the word. I guess to make people's lives better in the church. I love the amount of energy that she puts into that kind of, to making it a better place.
Yeah,
I like her. Okay, so I'll digress back to the conversation. So what kind of response did you have when people started seeing that your profile was up there, or like with family or friends when you started to tell them it wasn't just, oh, I'm not one of those women, but now it's, hey, I'm one of those women?
Well, I mean, with family, I just don't talk about it too much at all because of conflicts. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't actually sure if many people saw my profile. I did discover, well, I went to the first action in the fall, in October.
You mean the priesthood?
The priesthood action. Yeah, the first go stand in line for the priesthood session.
Okay.
And I almost didn't go to that until I remembered I had promised myself I would do everything I possibly could to mm-hmm. make this happen. And so I was like, you know, everything includes going to these priesthood actions. So mm-hmm. I took the train out there because, you know, we don't have a car.
Right.
And I actually ran into some in-laws I was actually leaving the action, going to my friend's car, and they like were in the elevator at the City Creek Mall.
Oh, like, wow.
Weird intersection. And it was actually interesting because earlier that day, like, the thought had come to me, what if I ran into some people that I knew? Mm. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to. What's the likelihood of that? And then it did happen. And so I kind of felt like the spirit was letting me prepare for it might happen. I mostly just said, you know, that we were there for conference and things like that. I didn't really go into why. Mm-hmm. But like within the ward, this past time, I also went to the April priesthood session action, and right before we went, I had visiting teaching, and we have a visiting teaching group in our ward. We have groups still.
What's a visiting teaching group?
It's just, there's like 12 of us that we get together and have dinner, and it's visiting teaching. Like, our ward has this all split up into groups, and so you can get together to go bike riding or go out for dessert
or have dinner. That's nice. Together.
Yeah, it's nice. It was April. So we have our visiting teaching group is scheduled for the first Tuesday of the month, so it's always really early. Okay. And it was before, or maybe this was March's, I don't remember. But it was before priesthood, the conference happened. I want to say it was right before. And on the way home, someone was driving me home, and they brought it up. They're like, oh, so you're going to go do the priesthood thing again? And I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't. In my brain, I was like, I didn't know you knew I had done that.
Wow.
But, like, they were very, you know, they didn't bring it up in front of the whole group. You know, they were fine one-on-one in the car. And, you know, people seemed to be nonchalant about it. At tithing settlement, my bishop actually mentioned he had a friend who was thinking about doing a profile. And I said, oh, yeah, you know, I've got one. And he was like, yeah, Heather, I've read it. He was actually at that meeting where Carolyn Pearson had told everyone about it. He just wasn't bishop yet. And he says, like, I read it back when there was, like, 12 up. And I was like, oh, yeah, I was actually the very first one up by, like, 10 seconds, which is why I'm on the very bottom, on the very far corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him that. I was like, you know, I was the very first one up by, like, 10 seconds. And he said, oh, that must have been an honor. Wow. So he was very good. He recently told me that, you know, I have the support of my priesthood leadership 100%. And so I feel like the ward and the stake, leadership-wise, is very understanding. And I know that they do try to consider women's issues when it comes to, like, the temple and things like that as well. I know they have meetings and stuff about that. They've given good talks. They're very supportive people. I live in a good ward.
Heather, I'm seriously thinking of moving to your stake. I have not. I would love to have that kind of support, and especially if Carolyn Pearson's in the stake. You know, that's a plus.
I tell my husband that when we moved from Provo to Oakland, we left Zion to go to the Celestial Kingdom. So,
oh, that's wonderful. I seriously, you're making me want to move. I would love to have that experience.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, like, everyone in the ward is, like, pro or, you know, ordaining women. It's just, you know, if you raise your hand in Relief Society and say a comment that might suggest that you are, they're not going to be like, oh, my goodness, you can't say that. Shut you down, you know.
Before I go on to my last question, I am curious, how was your experience with the two times that you went to the priesthood action sessions in 2013 in the fall and in the spring in 2014?
Well, in the fall, it was very heavy. It was probably compounded by the fact that I didn't get a lot of sleep on the train. Cause I also had my baby with me who was, I think, 8 or 9 months at the time. And you know, we stood in line. I was one of the last ones to ask at the door. I had kind of, like, saved my feelings up. Like, I wasn't scared about it going in and stuff. But, like, once I was up at the door, it was very, like, suddenly all those feelings I'd been hiding just came up to the front. And I got turned away. And that was just a lot. And it was very sad. And actually, when I came back in April, that somewhat colored my experience in April. I was actually further close in the line in April, just because I knew that in October they had cut off the line once the priesthood session started, so I wanted to make sure I had a chance to ask. And luckily they didn't cut it off this time, but I didn't know they weren't going to. So while a lot of people said they had really good conversations with the woman who was doing the turning away. I don't remember her name.
Mm-hmm.
I was so worried that if I didn't hurry up and ask and get out of line, the people behind me weren't going to have a chance to ask because that's how it had happened in the fall. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get to really, like, talk with her. I did feel like the way she was answering my questions, it felt like she wanted to speak more with me. And I could get that sense from her. And she was very open to talking about more, like, she, you know, the way she just used her voice was, you know, asking for me to basically speak some more. But I was just so worried that the people behind me wouldn't get a chance that I just was like, okay, I'm just going to end this really soon so that people can ask. And I kind of regret not talking with her more now that I know that she continued to let people ask far after the session started. So that was, oh, well.
Yeah.
But, so April wasn't as emotional for me because I felt like I got all of those emotions out in October.
Okay.
But it was good. This time I was with a friend. She came with me. We carpooled together. She's not a member. She's actually an anthropologist who's studying my ward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she grew up Catholic and she doesn't practice anymore. But she was like, this is interesting. I'm going to go to Utah with you. Because she also wanted to see, you know, the other Mormon sites and stuff like that. So she came with me. So she like held my baby. And so I wasn't as tired and I guess emotional as I was in October.
Wow, that is interesting. It probably helped to have a little bit of an objectivity to have a third person there that you're kind of looking at through their eyes as well as yours. I know that there's a strong push towards ordination of women in the Catholic Church. Is your friend, is she studying that at all in conjunction with the ordination for women in the Mormon Church?
No, she's not really studying ordained women or the ordination of women. She's just like studying our ward as a community.
Okay.
This was just like one aspect of the community. Oh, there's this one person here who's doing this, but she's also interviewing. She's going to do full interviews with lots of different people in the ward and stuff like that later this summer for her research.
Okay. All right. So, Heather, you starting off as one of the very first 20 people up on the page for ordainedwomen.org and hearing your story about making that promise to yourself, what is the vision that you have for ordination for women in the LDS Church?
Well, I personally would like, you know, whatever they've got for the men to be opened up for the women, as it is now. I think that trying to think of the best words to use.
Sure.
I know I didn't tell like why early on. I didn't share why early on I wanted
to. Okay. Do you want me to back?
Have
do you want me to backtrack?
I'll just do a small summary.
Okay.
And I think in my profile it hints at this, but because I wasn't sure how long to write my profile, I think it got really cut short. Mm-hmm. But there were times early in my marriage, and my husband is the most gentle, kindest person, only kills flies because I ask him to, kind of person. Early in our marriage, we were making, you know, decisions and stuff, and we'd pray about things. And I would very often defer to him, mostly because I had personal experience with him getting counsel from God. He had given me priesthood blessings for comfort and healing, and I knew that the words he was saying came from God, and so I knew that God spoke to him. And when we would sometimes get maybe differing answers in our prayers about things we were praying about, I would question, maybe he's got the right answer, because I know that that God speaks to him and he can recognize that. And I don't have any evidence that I have that same sort of connection with God. And I wish that we opened up the priesthood for everyone so that girls can have those same experiences. You know, right now, young men, when they go off at 18 or 19 and they go on their missions, they can baptize people, they give healing blessings, they can do all sorts of great things, and they physically learn how to recognize the words from God and use those to bless people. And I think that women do not have that experience, and I think that we can become, you know, lost as to how God speaks to us. And if we had practice in the ways that the young men get practice, I think we'd be more confident in feeling the Spirit and heeding the counsel of the Spirit. And I think that would be a really empowering thing for the women of the church.
Kind of like how we let everybody in primary have a chance to give a talk or read a scripture. And
right.
It kind of trains us to all be equally confident in speaking in to the congregation or in public. And I love that. I've always thought that was an amazing attribute in the church. So
yeah.
I can see what you're saying, or maybe this is what I hear, that, you know, girls being and women being allowed to recognize when they're being prompted in a kind of like a presiding position where they can speak on behalf of God, either through giving a blessing or baptizing their converts and physically doing the acts that Jesus Christ did, that they start learning to take that spiritual leadership too.
Yeah, I think that there's something really great about like the physical aspects of the priesthood, you know, having your hands on someone's head and baptizing someone and breaking the sacrament bread, that those sorts of rituals that women at the moment are kept from.
Mm-hmm.
I think they help, you know, people talk all the time about how ritual helps you get in tune with the spirit and physically feel those sorts of things. And, mm-hmm. and I wish that women had more access to that and more opportunities to practice that and learn what the spirit sounds like to them.
You know, Heather, I'm not sure if I'll keep this in or not, but I re-listened to my first interview on this Now series. I'm like, what did I share? I wanted to go back and listen to it. And on it, I had talked about how, right, like the day before I saw ordainedwomen.org on my email, I had had that experience where I wasn't even thinking about it, but I kept seeing myself like helping my husband at the time give my daughter a blessing. And then I saw myself giving him a blessing and just those wonderful feelings that came. And I might take this out, but one thing I didn't share that I thought I had forgotten about was that the last month that our marriage was together and I didn't know that it was about to split apart, it was months after, it was like 6 months after that, and there was just something wrong. I could just feel something wrong in our family. And I thought, you know, we need a blessing. And like, I could feel, you know how like as a mom and as a wife, you can kind of tune into the family and you sense that there's something, and it's either like emotional or spiritual, or like you can kind of get a pulse on what's going on with your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell that there needed to be a blessing. And I'm like, you know, can you give me a blessing and then give Sarah a blessing? And we were all sitting around and he's like, I don't feel like it. And I was just sitting there and all of a sudden it just dawned on me, Cammie, you can do this. And just this beautiful light came into my, my soul. And I said to my husband at the time, I said, do you want a blessing from me? And he looked at me and the tears started coming down his face and he goes, I think I would. And so I walked over and my daughter closed her eyes and bowed her head. And I'd never done that before, but I felt called to. And I stood behind him and put my hands on his head. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to give him a blessing from my heart. It won't necessarily be in the name of Jesus Christ, you know, and just kind of like giving him my good energy, but in the form of a blessing. And I didn't know how entitled I felt to doing that, if I felt worthy or capable, since I was not given the quote priesthood as a woman. And so I laid my hands on his head and I started to give him a blessing. I thought I was going to say certain words, and I started saying words I hadn't prepared, and I stopped and I said, I just stopped and I said, the thing that Jesus Christ wants for you is to be happy. And he started to cry, and I gave him the blessing in the name of Jesus Christ. It just all flowed out just naturally. And that was, I remembered that was the last experience we had as a couple. And it was like a few weeks later, a couple weeks later, that he confessed some stuff to me and my marriage was over. And I remembered that was giving the blessing was like the last thing I did as a wife. I don't know. That's kind of, it was very beautiful. It was the last spiritual experience that we had together. And he was crying at the end. It was really cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, well, thank you so much, Heather, for sharing your story. And I'll put a link up for your post, your profile on ordainedwomen.org. And thank you for sharing.